Jacob must journey. Then came the flight, Jacob's escape from house and camp, planned and carried out by his resolute and stout-hearted mother, who sent her darling away, content never to see him again, if only he possessed the blessing and might carry it through the years. She was too wise and far-seeing not to know what must be the issue of that solemn betrayal, but she assumed the burden deliberately, as she had deliberately laid it upon her son, and offered up her heart. She did so silently. Even in the necessary conversation with Isaac, not a word was said of the real posture of affairs. They avoided actualities. But nothing escaped her. It lay in the nature of things that Esau would brood in his bewildered soul over plans of revenge and seek to upset what she had done. But also she knew how he went about to play the role of Cain. She learned that he had got in touch with Ishmael, the man of the wilderness, the darkly beautiful youth who had been cast forth. They plotted together. Nothing could be more natural. They were of the same disadvantaged breed, the brother of Isaac, the brother of Jacob. They walked in the same footsteps. They were unlovely, shut out. Of course they would draw together. In reality, matters were even worse than Rebekah had foreseen, for Esau's murderous thoughts were directed not only towards Jacob, but towards Isaac as well. He heard that he had proposed to Ishmael to murder the blind man, after which he, Esau, would take upon himself the smooth man. He shrank from the deed of Cain, shrank from becoming more and more clearly himself through committing it. Thus the suggestion that the uncle give him courage by acting first. But Ishmael made difficulties, and that gave his sister-in-law time to turn round. He did not care for the idea. Memories of the feeling he had once cherished towards his more delicate brother, which must then have been made the pretext for his expulsion, made it hard for him, he said, to raise his hand against Isaac. Esau would better do that himself. Then he, Ishmael, would plant an arrow so neatly in the back of Jacob's neck that it would stick out through his throat in front, and the favorite would straightway measure his length on the ground. It was like Ishmael to make these proposals. They were something new, whereas Esau had only the traditional fratricide in mind. He did not understand the other's meaning, and thought he was talking at random. Father murder did not come within his range of ideas. It had never happened. There was not such a thing. The proposal was without practical value. It was absurd. It might come to pass that a man cut off his father's manhood with a sickle, as had been done to Noah, but to kill him? The idea was sheer moonshine. Ishmael laughed at his nephew's open-mouthed incomprehension. He knew that the idea was far from being moonshine, that it had in fact quite a venerable actuality, and was perhaps the beginning of all things. That Esau contented himself with stopping short too soon, with beginning too late, when he thought such a thing had never come to pass. He told him so, and more. He said things that, when he heard them for the first time, made Esau run away in horror, with his fleeces standing on end. He recommended him, after killing his father, to eat abundantly of the flesh, in order to incorporate into himself the Abram blessing. And to that end, he must not cook Isaac's body, but eat from it raw, with bones and blood. Whereat Esau ran away a second time. He came back, of course, but it took some time for them to apportion their roles in the murder drama, and that gave Mother Rebekah time to act. She told Isaac nothing of what his near relatives were plotting against him. Husband and wife confined their conversations to Jacob, and not in the sense that he was threatened by danger, though even Isaac must have been aware of that. Their talk had no reference to the deception or the wrath of Esau. About that, they were altogether silent. They merely said that Jacob must go a journey to Mesopotamia in search of his Aramaic kin, for if he stopped here, there was danger of him making an unfortunate marriage. He, too. It was on this plane the parents came to an understanding. If Jacob took a wife from the daughters of the land, said Rebekah, a Hittite woman who would be like Esau's wives and commit the abomination of idol worship, what, she asked Isaac in all seriousness, would life be worth to her? Isaac nodded, and on this ground agreed with her that Jacob must go away for a while. For a while. So she told Jacob, too, and she meant it seriously. At least, she hoped it would be so. She knew Esau. He was a hare-brained, light-headed creature. He would forget. He was bent on bloodshed just now, but his mind could be distracted. She knew that while he was with Ishmael in the wilderness, he had lost his head over Ishmael's daughter, Mahalath, and considered marriage with her. Perhaps even now his mind was beginning to dwell on this more peaceful concern, rather than on thoughts of revenge. When he seemed to have calmed down and abandoned all such ideas, then Jacob would receive a message from her and return home to her bosom. For the present, her brother Laban, the son of Bethuel, living 17 days' journey from here in the country of Naharaim, would receive him with open arms. So the flight was resolved upon, and Jacob privily got ready for the journey towards Aram. Rebekah did not weep, but she held him long to her in the early dawn, stroked his cheeks, hung charms round his and his camels' necks, embraced him again, and thought in her heart that if her God or another so willed it, she might perhaps never see him again. So it turned out. But Rebekah had no regrets, either then or later. Jacob must weep. We know what happened to the traveler on the first day out, his shame and his great exultation. But the exultation was inward, a great soul vision, whereas the disgrace was actual and physical, like the journey, which he then had to continue in its sign and as its victim, alone, that is, and a beggar. The way was long, and he was not Eliezer, to whom the land, quote, came to meet him, end of quote, as he went. He thought a great deal about the old man, Abram's messenger and head servant, who had resembled his forefather in face, according to all accounts, and who had come this way on his great errand to fetch Rebekah for Isaac. But he had travelled in state, as was fitting, with his 10 camels and all goodly gear of his master's providing, with necessities and with superfluities, as Jacob himself had been before the accursed meeting with Eliphaz. Why had God the king seen fit to do this to him? Why had he punished him with such wretchedness and hardship? For that the matter was one of punishment, of retribution and compensation for Esau's sake, he did not doubt. And upon his hard and heavy journey, he pondered much upon the nature of the Lord, who had certainly willed and brought about what had happened, yet punished him, Jacob, for it, making him pay for Esau's tears, if only for form's sake, as it were, and with benevolent partiality. For all his burden, however heavy, was it fair payment for the advantage he had over his permanently disadvantaged brother? The mere question made Jacob laugh in his beard, the beard which had grown on his journey, that darkened the more his lean brown face, glistening with sweat beneath the damp and dirty headcloth. It was high summer, the month Ab, hopelessly hot and dry. The dust lay finger-thick on trees and shrubbery. Jacob swayed loosely on the ridge of his lean, uncomfortable camel, whose great knowing eyes were infested round with flies, and grew ever wearier and more melancholy. When he passed other travelers, he veiled his face. Or he eased the animal by leading it on the bridle, walking beside it on one of the parallel paths that made up the road, his feet deep in a dust of powdered stone. He slept in the open, in the field, at the foot of a tree in an olive orchard, beside the wall of a village, as it happened, lying close to his beast for warmth. For the nights were often perishingly cold, and he was used to houses and sensitive, so that he often caught cold and coughed like a consumptive on the hottest day. The cough was troublesome. It hindered him in earning his living, for of course he had to get his bread by relating to all and sundry the story of his distresses and the reason why he, the son of such a family, was journeying in poverty. He told his tale in the villages, in the market squares, by the well outside the wall, where he was permitted to wash himself and water his beast. Men and boys and women with jugs stood round and listened to his tale, which was broken by coughing, but otherwise well and vividly told. He gave his name, celebrated his origins, described in detail the lordly life he led in his own home and the rich meals he sat down to, then went on to draw a picture of the loving liberality with which he, the firstborn son of the house, had been equipped for the journey to Haran in the land of Aram, eastwards and northwards beyond the river Prath, where dwelt certain kin of his, whose repute among the inhabitants of the land was not matter for wonder, seeing how many thousands of sheep and goats they possessed. He had been sent to them, and the reason of his sending was partly business, but partly a religious mission of far-reaching importance. He dwelt in detail on the gifts and tokens he had had in his pack, the adornments of his camels, the weapons for securing his princely safety, the dainties for him and his train, and his sensation-hungry auditors, though well aware that a man can draw a long bow, unanimously refrained from making any distinction between the true and the well-invented, and stood with eyes and mouths wide open as they listened. In such state he had left home, but alas, certain districts of the land were infested with bandits. They were quite young, but uncommonly bold. As he passed with his caravan through a ravine, they had, with their great numbers, cut off his advance and his rear, also any possibility of escaping sideways, and a battle had ensued, more thrilling than anything of the kind in the memory of man. Jacob painted it in detail, thrust for thrust and blow for blow. The ravine had been filled with bodies of men and beasts. He himself had laid low 7 times 7 young robbers, and each one of his men a smaller number. But alas, the superior numbers of the foe had told in the end. One after another, his own people had fallen round him, and after many hours of fighting, he, the sole survivor, had voided the field. Why, asked a woman, had they not killed him too? They had tried to. The robber captain, youngest and most insolent of the band, had lifted his sword for the mortal blow, but Jacob, in his great need, had called upon his God, and the name of the God of his fathers, with the result that the bloodthirsty youth's sword had been shattered in mid-air into 7 times 70 pieces, and the detestable creature's senses were so dazed, and he so sorely smitten with fright, that he and his men had fled away, taking with them, however, all Jacob's possessions, and he was left naked. Naked, then, he had steadfastly pursued his course, for at his goal there awaited him only balsam for his wounds, milk and honey, and clothing of purple and fine linen. But till then, alas, he had naught. No place to lay his head, nothing to still the pangs of hunger in his belly, for it was empty these many days. He struck his breast, and his hearers at the booths where they sold meat and drink did likewise, for they were affected by his story, and found it shameful that such things could come to pass, and the highways be so unsafe. In their country, they said, there were guards on the road, one every 2 hours' journey. Then they gave the afflicted man to eat, cakes and dumplings, cucumbers, garlic and dates, sometimes even a pair of pigeons or a duck. And they put down hay and even grain for his beast, to give it strength to proceed on its way. Thus he went on, moving towards the course of the Jordan, into hollow Syria, the gorge of the Orontes, and the foot of Mount Lebanon. But his progress was slow, for he had to earn his bread. He visited the temples in the cities, talked with the priests about the divine essence, and made a good impression on them with wise and well-informed words, so that they let him strengthen and provide himself from the store chambers of the god. He saw upon his travels much that was beautiful and sacred, saw the lordly mountain of the furthest north sparkle as with fiery precious stones, and prayed to it, saw regions watered by the snow from the mountains, where the tall trunks of the swaying date palms were like the scaly tails of dragons, where the landscape was dark with groves of cedar and sycamore, and there were trees with clusters of sweet fruit like bread. He saw crowded cities, and Damascus lying among fruit orchards and enchanted gardens. There he saw a sundial, and from there, in fear and repulsion, he saw the desert. It was red, as it should be, stretching eastwards in a dull red haze, a sea of impurity, the playground of evil spirits, the lower world. Yes, this now fell to Jacob's lot. God sent him into the desert, because he had been the cause of Esau's loud and bitter wailing. It was God's will. His path, which had led on Bethel's height to so comforting an ascent, had now attained its westernmost point, where it descended into the infernal regions of the world, and who knew what danger of dragons awaited him there. He wept a little as he swayed into the wastes on the hump of his beast. Ahead of him, a jackal was running, dirty yellow with pointed ears, his tail sticking out stiffly behind, a sorry god-beast, an offensive mask. He ran before the rider, sometimes letting him come so near that Jacob could scent his pungent smell, turned his dog's head to look at the rider out of hateful little eyes, then trotted on with his abrupt laugh. Jacob was far too well versed in such matters not to recognize in him the opener of the way, the everlasting guide into the kingdom of the dead. He would have been surprised not to see him, and wept afresh as he followed on into those drear and barren stretches of the borderland between Syria and Naharaina, among loose boulders and desolate rock, through stony fields and plains of clay and sand, burnt-out steppe and dry tamarisk thicket. He was fairly clear as to his route, the way his first forefather had once taken in reverse direction, the son of Terah coming to the place whither Jacob now strove, sent westwards, as he now eastwards. The thought of Abram somewhat consoled him in his loneliness. Moreover, the road was not without all trace of human beings and their concerns. Here and there was a clay tower that one might climb, first to look round, but also if one were in danger from wild beasts. And now and then there was even a well. But best of all, there were signposts, stakes and stones set up with inscriptions, guided by which night travel was possible, provided there was even a little moonlight. They had doubtless served Abram upon his journeyings. Jacob praised God for the good deeds of civilization, and followed Nimrod's signposts towards the river Prath, that is to say, towards the point he had in mind, which was the right one, where the very broad issued from the mountain gorges through which it burst from the north and subsided in the plain. Oh, wonderful hour, when Jacob stood at last in the mud among the reeds and let his poor beast drink from the yellow flood. A bridge of boats crossed it, and on the other side lay a town. But it was not the dwelling of the moon god, not the city of the way and Nahor's city. That was still far off across the eastern plain, which he had yet to cross by the help of the signposts under the burning fiery sun of Ab. 17 days? Ah, it became much more for Jacob, needing as he did to keep on relating his bloodthirsty tale. He knew not how many times he had ceased to count, and only knew that the earth by no means sprang to meet him, but rather the contrary, doing all it could to keep withdrawing the goal from his weary march. But he never forgot, he spoke of it even on his deathbed, how it was suddenly there, all in a moment, when he least expected it and thought it far away. He had reached it, or as good as reached it. After all, it did come to meet him, together with the best and dearest of all it had to give, that which Jacob then had one day after his long, long sojourn to take away with him.